Hello and welcome to Kitchen Curiosity, the podcast that delves into the heart of food service equipment and the hospitality industry. I'm your host, Radford Chancellor. Continuing to start on our season two, in this episode we're going to be discussing something a little bit different, but nevertheless something that we all love and an interesting topic as well, ice cream. This is episode two, Chasing Sweet Dreams, the world of ice cream and gelato. Now my first guest is head of the Ice Cream Alliance. It's the UK's only ice cream trade association for manufacturers and retailers. He's a strategic thinker and he also runs an award-winning ice cream business. The Ice Cream Alliance runs the only UK trade show and the UK's only national ice cream competition. I have to say, saying ice cream that many times made me think about the ice cream I might have tonight. I'm delighted to welcome David Equi to the show. David, thank you for being with us and welcome to Kitchen Curiosity. How are you today?
Hi, Radford. I'm not too bad. Myself, how are you?
I'm good, good. It's the sun's out, so all okay. So, I mean, to kick us off, can you give us a bit of background about your upbringing and what led you into a career of the wonderful world of ice cream?
Well, yeah, I mean, very much from an ice cream family. My surname, Equi, is from Tuscany in Italy. Okay. So my grandfather, or nonno, Pietro, as we called him, emigrated at this, was actually a war refugee at the start of the First World War. And he came over with a bunch of Italians, all from the local villages. And they, because basically they were starving. There was not a lot going on and there was no food. So they had to look elsewhere. So a bunch of them, Italians, typically at that time, they either went, that group went to Scotland or they went to New York. So my grandfather, I think I'd have maybe gone to New York, but my grandfather was with his uncle, and he...
You could have had an American accent today.
And he was only 15 at the time, and he went with his uncle, and it was very tough times. And anyway, he started just working in cafes in Glasgow, sleeping behind the counter and things, because didn't have anywhere to live. And eventually, and then really quite quickly, started to build himself up as a bit. And by the time he was 22, he'd saved up enough money to buy his own cafe, which he'd always wanted to. And he'd been the manager of some big grand Italian cafe in Glasgow when he was about 20. But the thing was, at the time, there were a lot of... every Scottish town had loads of Italian cafes, so they were quite kind of, you know, people liked them and they liked them. So he opened his own place in 1922, which is still open to this day. I've still got the original bill of sale of the shop where he paid £700 for it.
Wow. And,
so we're going to fast forward a few years now. Right at the beginning, it was like the Italian cafes at the time, they all made their own vanilla ice cream. Well, it wasn't really vanilla ice cream. It was milk ice, but I'll explain what that is later if you want. And then he would serve that, and they all had these, they had a few tables and chairs, and people would go in. They would sell boxes of chocolates and things, and they would have fish and chips, as that's what they did as well. So you get this, you get this combination of things. It was typical of wasn't a big unit, but it became quite popular. It was quite a good location. And he carried on doing that and did very well right up until Second World War. And of course, he had a family by then, three sons, including Robert, my father. Our company's called Peter Equi and Sons. So he changed his name to Peter now. Quite a lot of the family got interned in the Second World War and a lot of trouble. But by this point, my nonno was a naturalised Briton. So... Mm-hmm. He was allowed to stay, but I think it was tough times. I mean, there was some of the family telling me all that. My dad was a boy, but he remembered it all. And the cafe got ransacked a few times. It was all very thing. But all this time, they were doing ice cream and fish and chips. But on the plus side, because the local town was like a barracks area, there was a lot of people about. So I think they did all right. And then just through hard work, he kept going. Fast forward again, about another 30, 40 years, my dad built a much bigger outlet than that, and he started making ice cream. He was always involved in the Ice Cream Alliance. He loved the trade association. He made ice cream, but basically he just made it for himself. It became known as a sort of destination place to go. He started flavors mid-70s. I came into the business mid-80s, didn't really want to come into the business at first, but I did because I was helping my dad out. And then I started in all sorts of areas and making the ice cream. My dad had taught me. I was a student at Edinburgh University. And my dad made me, I had a job working in a burger place in Princes Street till 3 a.m, which was quite good fun. Quite good fun.
Yeah.
But my dad needed cover. He said, right, you're coming back to work because it's about 50 miles away. And I went back and said, I'm going to show you the big secrets of how to, he said, this little room, I'm going to show you the secrets of how to make ice cream. I'm going to write this down and you're not allowed to show it to anybody. And I thought, oh God, this is like Hollywood film or something. And he went through it all and it was really quite detailed as instructions. And he said, his one thing was, do not at any stage ever vary from any of these points. That was his big thing. Do not vary from any. And I said, it's just like very scientific, Dad. You know, it says 2 scoops. I said, how?
Yeah.
And bear in mind, I just graduated from, well, I was in the process of graduating from business school.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he did that and I went backwards and forwards. Then left university and none of my pals, we all got jobs straight away. And so we were looking around for things to do, although we were all graduates. And I ended up going back working for him for a year. I mean, one of my contemporaries at the time is now the First Minister of Scotland. So it just showed you we were all in the same boat.
Oh, wow, okay.
We were all in the same boat. And I ended up, and then I really, and he got me back, and he had this little cafe restaurant by then, and he made the ice cream just for that. So I started to do that, and as well as doing all the other things like the office and the books and things, and he had a little staff of about 20, and I started getting it. And he had a real love for ice cream, my dad, but he was quite particular in his ways, but he was very, very proud of his family's history, and he'd kept all. We've got a lot of old memorabilia, and he'd kept it all. So fast forward a bit again, my dad and he passed away quite young, my father, so and my uncle, so I was left not knowing, really kind of knowing what to do, but I always had an ambition to supply loads of other people, and because I really loved making ice cream by this stage, and I always wanted to win an award. My dad had been involved with the trade, but he'd never won a medal. So there was one time when my father let me make the ice cream, because we were only partners for about 5 years, and he let me make the ice cream for a national award, and we got, the first time I made it, we got a silver medal, and it was the happiest I can ever remember. My father, and not longer after that, he took
it. Very proud moment.
It was, not long after that. And I admitted to him afterwards that I'd changed the recipe completely.
Oh, no.
And he said, that doesn't matter, son. You carry on doing what you want to do. So when he was ill, we used to have great chats about the history of ice cream, and that's how I ended up getting in. And I decided I wanted to supply other people. I still had cafes. And then, so I carried on doing that. This time we built the production up. And I maybe got a bit sidetracked. I owned various cafes and restaurants, sometimes in a lot of them with a business partner. But ice cream was my true love. So we've been gradually began supplying Independence in Scotland with our own ice cream. We had to upgrade our facilities. And my big thing has always been from the very start, I was quite into innovation. I was quite inspired, very much Italian inspired as well, but inspired by the Americans as well. Like that, you remember the times when nobody had ever heard of Ben & Jerry's and Häagen-Dazs.
Yeah.
I joined the Ice Cream Alliance, which my father had been president. I didn't really want to join it because, which is the trade association for all ice cream people. Because I thought, I don't really want to follow that. But I thought, I'll go along. The first meeting, they made me the local chairman. And then within about a year, I was like the legal and technical guy national and ended up being president quite quickly. And the best trip I ever went on was they did a day trip to, so not a day trip, a week's trip, ice cream tour to New York and that kind of area, Connecticut, and visiting various ice cream places, which I thought was fantastic, and with like-minded people in a minibus. And we went to the original Ben & Jerry's place, and we did all that. And that is also the trip where I met Donald Trump, the real Donald Trump, in Trump Towers, and he signed a book for my mum.
And that was that was on the Ice Cream Alliance.
It was. And I gave it to my mum, and she had no idea who he was. I'm talking 25 years ago.
So talking about your business now, what is it do now? Is it mainly supplying and manufacturing ice cream?
We built our own, I got rid of all the other stuff, we built our own purpose-built brand new factory. I've had two or three factories, right, but this, my most recent one was my lifelong ambition. I maybe left it a bit late, but okay. I built it about, just, I signed the lease 4 weeks before the start of lockdown, which wasn't the right time. Yeah, and, no. And it took us like 2 years to get up and running, but we've been up and running about 3 years now. So our current setup is we've got a kind of state-of-the-art production facility. It says we're just a small to medium manufacturer. We do supply a lot of independent people. We do about 1 million litres of ice cream a year, which is...
Wow, that doesn't seem small to me.
And we supply most of the major multiples, including... Can't tell you who, but some premium-owned brand. But it's all high-end. I've got a great tie-in with a local farm. I know them very, very well. They're just up the road from me. It's one of the benefits of living in a place called East Kilbride, where it rains. It's the highest rainfall in the west of Scotland. And it means the grass is very green, which means the cows are really happy. And with what they're eating, and the dairy produce is unbelievable in Scotland. So... Right. We're able to use that. We're very strict in our provenance, and it's mainly a lot of independent trade, mainly in Scotland, but we're starting to do a bit of export now as well.
Okay. All right. So the Ice Cream Alliance, I think now, obviously, you said you were president at one point, but now you're on the board, aren't you? You're a board member, I believe.
I'm back on the board, yes. It's like
back
one of
on
these
the board. Hollywood. So what is it? What is the Ice Cream? For people that don't know, what is the Ice Cream Alliance, and why is it... And interesting for people to be a member, really.
I know when you say the word Ice Cream Alliance, it always sounds like it's some kind of Marvel organisation or something. You know, we are
what the superheroes of ice cream. Yeah,
we are the Ice Cream Alliance, and we are on a mission to, with our fabulous new director of operations, to stop to make it more relevant to the younger entrants to the trade and people like that, like my daughter who's in the business, all that kind of stuff. But the Ice Cream Alliance is a historical organisation started. It was a combination of two, the Ice Cream Association and some other one, in about 1940. Yeah. And at that time, everybody was in the Ice Cream Alliance, right? And why was everybody in the Ice Cream Alliance? Because they controlled where you could get sugar, and because it was during rationing. So if you're in an Italian cafe and you made ice cream, you could only do that. It was like a closed shop almost. So everybody joined the Ice Cream Alliance. It then became a kind of social thing. It was very Italian influenced at the beginning, but not all, you know, not because those were it was based among the smaller people that made stuff. And it was very much a social thing. They looked after the members, and they used to represent in parliament and things. But there was different sectors to the market. There was people who did like mobiling, and then there was people who made their own ice cream. I mean, a lot of people made their own ice cream then, a lot more than do now. Yeah?
Yeah.
And there was like retailers and parlors in different sectors. So it's the... I was involved, I was president about 20 years ago. We used to do a lot of national stuff like National Ice Cream Week, just awareness, perception, you know, promoting the product and things like that, looking after. Big thing is technical queries. And now we've got, as I say, we've got a revitalised Ice Cream Alliance 2.0, we call it. And I don't think you can afford not to be a member if you're making ice cream, even just for the meeting fellow people in the same trade, sharing ideas within your sector, whether you're we've got a separate thing for suppliers, we've got a separate section for like parlours that just make for themselves, or for small manufacturers that have got their own particular needs. Things that I can relate to 100% being hands-on as a managing director of a manufacturer that has to do audits. Suddenly you'll get it could happen now. I've got a phone call. Well, it won't because I've got my phone on silent, but a certain supermarket has turned up for an unannounced 2-day audit. You need to be here. And stuff like that. It's coping with things like that.
They do that?
Yes. Uh-huh. People have, you know, it's not something you're used to when you're... Now, if you're making your ice cream in yourself in your little back shop like my dad, you don't have to worry about any of that. Although, actually, the law is actually the same. So things like allergen...
Whether you're small or massive or whatever.
Yeah, things like... It's just how they enforce it. So things like allergens and things like that are so important all over now. And this is why the smaller people need to be super aware. The Ice Cream Alliance offers free technical support, which, believe me, you know, I mean, I've tried to get, we've got, it's at least £600 a day to hire a technical guy. And yeah. It's a bit of a no-brainer. And the big thing is, I think you need to treat it as much of a science as you can, rather than just throwing things in left, right, and centre. You've got to be really, so in manufacturing, it's got to be, everything's got to be precision, and even in a small scale. I mean, there is a lot of room for improvisation in ice cream, which we do all the time. And I'm just back from the 4-day show in Rimini, which is the biggest ice cream show in the world. 50,000 okay. people a day, every new flavour wow. under the sun. But so the Ice Cream Alliance is the British end of that, and it promotes ice cream in general. It supports manufacturers. It runs its own exhibition and all sorts of things like that. Basically anything. And for both from the mobilers who have their own separate sector to parlours, because I used to own a ice cream parlour in Lars that had 340 covers, believe it or not, and yeah. and stuff like that. And you can get them. At the moment, I'm just purely manufacturing.
Okay. There's a random question here, but history about ice cream,
uh-huh.
and maybe context of your role at the Alliance and also your business. And so there's a kind of legend that Marco Polo introduced ice cream to Europe. Is this a true legend, or is this just some sort of story? Or, yeah.
My dad used to go on about this all the time. You know, the Italians,
oh, did he?
Everybody's got different stories about things like that. I think that is partially true about Marco Polo.
Okay, right.
The one that people go on about is the 99. I've heard about 500 stories about the 99, but that was the case.
And what's that one?
99 was supposed to be, it was named after a brigade in the army, and it was supposed to be.
Oh, okay.
There's all sorts of things like that, but apparently it's just a marketing thing at the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
maybe said in 99, maybe the cone with the flake.
There's quite a lot of folklore around about ice cream just because people have grown up talking about where ice cream came from originally. Yeah, I've got a recipe book that's got like sort of traditional recipes from medieval times and things like that. So, you know, ice cream, it does go back.
Go back a long way. So, I mean, people probably don't know, because we probably, as consumers, know a handful of ice cream companies, brands that probably resonate with us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true to say there's over 1,000 in the UK, is that correct? Producing hundreds of flavours?
That'll be correct if you include all the micro manufacturers and people that manufacture for themselves. Now, I'll give you but that's nothing compared to what it used to be.
Seriously?
Yeah. See, if you went back to, I think I read somewhere that, and I know this is true, in 1900, there were 400 ice cream shops in Glasgow.
Oh, my word. So, yeah, so 1,000 is like nothing in that.
But yeah. I think they were all a bit, you know, I don't think they were pretty substantial. A better comparison would be just back from Bologna. There are 220 gelaterias in Bologna.
Alone,
yes. All making their own, right? So we're not talking about places that are just serving from a scooping cabinet. We're talking about the places that have got the signs up saying it's artigianale and all that kind of stuff.
It's produced from scratch.
Now, there's a lot of people that, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of people that can cheat. So that's where you start getting into that freshly made at each bit. So there's different types of outlet. Then we can get into a whole massive, it would be a whole separate podcast, Radford, about the concepts of gelato and ice cream. But to me, that is just as gelato is when you go to Italy and it's made in the little shop. It's freshly made. It's strong flavours. They all say they make it fresh every day. They all lie. They don't make it every day. And there's a wee bit of cheating going on at some stages, but generally the concept is it is on the whole made, and it's not a lot of shelf life. That is a completely different concept from ice cream that you would buy to keep at home, because that stuff is beautiful, right? But it tends only to be nice when you eat it straight away, because it doesn't have the keeping qualities.
So, I mean, do you have a favourite flavour? And you know, what would be your kind of favourite flavour or combo of flavours? What would be your go-to? Well, can't you say that as a manufacturer?
Well, last week it was ice cream tasting central when we were at in Rimini. My wife and I were there, and and all it is different flavour houses showing off their concepts. And I like the fancy ones, so I could be. But the way ice cream get there, usually we say is we all prefer vanilla because it's the true sign of an ice cream, because there's nothing in it apart from, you know, or even a white ice cream without the vanilla, like a traditional ice cream, like fresh milk double
cream. Yeah, because you can actually taste, it's not being marshed.
All you're tasting is the dairy. But what my favourite is probably that with just a hint of Madagascan vanilla. But we try all sorts of things. I tried a flavour the other day that I was going to replicate. It was a crema di parma, which is like Italian custard with bits of vanilla croquant in it. And some liqueur and stuff like that. So it's quite sophisticated, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beautiful. Do you see savoury flavours coming through?
Well, funny you should say that, but there were a few savoury flavours at that show as well. Savoury flavours are interesting to me. I've tried a few of them that I quite like, and you get them in the fancy restaurants and things, because they have a machine, those Swiss machines that can make the blend that they can make, but they can only make very small amounts, but definitely not mass market. There was a guy that tried ice cream with veg. I can't remember, it was called Smuggled or something, with bits of veg in the ice cream. I don't think that went very well. It was like 8% broccoli in with it was actually quite a good recipe, because you get used to people's ready. I can look at the labels, it's all. It was actually a really high-end ice cream, but then it's something like 8% broccoli, which didn't really go.
No, hard one to push.
But savoury ones, I'm not really a fan of. It'd be nice to have as in a fancy restaurant, but they're definitely not mass market.
Something like Heston's playing with it, doing some sort of fancy starter or something.
Yeah, that's nice in that context. But in terms of... Well, that sell with it doesn't even sell in Italy.
Yeah,
it's more of
a bespoke thing. And so sustainability, I mean, obviously it's a massive subject, you know, we talk about environmental sustainability. Mm-hmm. How do you see the ice cream industry addressing environmental concerns in terms of like ingredients and packaging? Is this a subject that you guys are talking about in the Alliance or...?
Absolutely, absolutely. We have a big seminar on that at our exhibition coming up shortly.
Okay.
And as a business, I supply supermarkets, and if you want to, you usually have to go put it out to tender every couple of years, and you have to reapply for it, and you have to show every step that you've done towards sustainability. You've got to improve all the time. So a lot of our 500ml packaging is all non-plastic. It's recyclable. The trays that the ice cream get in your typical ice cream scooping cabinet, which are always plastic, to be honest, there's a new version of them coming out that's made with completely 100% recycled plastic, which therefore doesn't have, well, it's actually 50%, but it you don't pay the plastic tax on it anymore. So we're in the process of reducing down, and our customers are really keen on things we can do like that. We recently won a Green Award in our factory for the way we recycle all our water. We save 16 million litres of water a year. And and Princess Anne came up to open the place as a result of that. So we're keen on... Yes, uh-huh.
Wow.
And I can tell you what our favourite flavour of ice cream is, if you want.
Oh, yeah, we'd love to hear that. Could you give that away?
I can give that away. I'm not breaking the Official Secrets Act here. But mango, apparently, because they have a lot of mangoes left over. And then sometimes, so the chef uses them. That's how he gets
makes them. Yeah.
So that sounds nice. So I didn't wanker myself an invite, but I did show around for about an hour. She was lovely, actually. She was good PR.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was very interested in the eco-sustainability and all that stuff. And so in Ice Cream Alliance, happy to, in some businesses, you know, some trades, like even a few years ago, people wouldn't cooperate with each other. But it's really important, I think, for manufacturers, suppliers, to help each other and engage in best practice, because all this secret society and secret recipe stuff is just a load of nonsense, you know. Mm. So there's more to be gained from everybody. I mean, obviously, some things are you've got to keep to yourself, but the more we can help. So I've learned a lot from other people. Is that you think that young boy that went to America to see all these things, I thought that was great. It was, at that point, I didn't have any customers, you know, and now I export ice cream to America, which I would just never have dreamed of.
Yeah, which is a heck of an achievement. Well, David, it's been fantastic listening to, you know, what bit about your career, how you got into ice cream. What we're going to do is we're going to just take a short break. I'm going to talk to the area manager for Ice Team 1927, and then we're going to come back, you and me, and we're going to discuss about the Ice Cream Alliance a bit more and the trade show that's coming up.
Welcome to the world of Ali, the largest and most diverse food service equipment company on the planet. With over 110 brands under the Ali Group umbrella, we serve more than 150 countries worldwide. Our brands are at the forefront of innovation, offering cutting-edge technology and ergonomic designs that keep pace with the ever-evolving market. But we're not just a global leader, we're a network of local companies working together to deliver excellence. Ali Group's unmatched expertise in food service makes us the proud exclusive sponsor of Kitchen Curiosity. To learn more, visit aligroup.com.
I'm now joined by the area manager of Ice Team 1927, an Ali Group company. This gentleman is highly experienced in the world of ice cream and business relationships. He looks after clients all over the globe. I'm delighted to welcome to the show Stefano Franceschi, all the way from Italy, the home of Gelato. Stefano, welcome to the podcast. How's your day been so far?
Very good, thank you.
Great, great. Whereabouts in Italy are you calling us from today?
I am from Rubiera, close to Modena, a small town close to Modena.
Ah, okay, perfect. So let's start by diving into your role at Ice Team 1927 and your career in Ali Group. How did it all sort of start for you in ice cream and Ali Group?
Basically, I was a customer of the group. And after I sold my company, the company asked me to keep working together as a consultant. And so I started working with them a couple of years ago and as our manager and helping in business.
Okay. So can you give us a bit of insight into Ice Team 1927? You know, where's your factory based? A few ideas about your products and ranges and things you make, basically.
Okay, so basically we produce all the range of machines for gelato and all the appliances you need in a kitchen, in a gelato kitchen. We are based in Anzola Emilia, which is really close to Bologna. Okay. And Bologna is in the heart of the food valley. And it's a very particular town for gelato because it is one of the most important towns for the gelato tradition in Italy. We believe that we got the best quality in Italy, and so we are really focusing into that product in gelato.
Okay. And what sort of things do you manufacture? I mean, you know, specifically ice cream machines and things.
Pasteurizers, gelato machines, pastry machines, and all the machines you need to produce good gelato and pastries. Okay. Blast freezers, everything.
So is it more about manufacturing of gelato, or is it also the retail aspect as well?
So we take care of both sides, the retail preparation of all the products and everything you need in a gelato kitchen. And we are now launching on the market some new product about industrial, but the first step of the industrial production.
Okay, perfect. So what inspired you to work for Ice Team, or maybe more specifically in ice cream? I mean, obviously, we all love ice cream, but yeah, what got you into it?
But I always love to cook and to prepare food recipes. And I go back a lot of years ago. So I start working in the food business, in gelato business at the beginning of the 90s, in 1991.
Okay.
So I was working for an ingredients company, working as a sales consultant and technic. I worked for that company for about 8 years. Then I decided to open my first shop in Italy. And I kept working as a consultant in sales for about 12 more years. Then I decided to go in the other part of the world to open my first shop abroad.
Okay.
And I started a chain of gelato, pastries, and coffee shops in the Caribbean and United States.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then you subsequently sold that business, and that's what brought you to Icesteam.
Yes, Icesteam was a supplier. Mm-hmm. I had a really good relationship with them. I love the approach with the market, because they are chef-oriented more than sales-oriented. So they take a lot of care about what we need in order to produce great products. And yeah. I always liked it. I always liked them.
Yeah, so it's kind of a natural move, I guess.
Yeah, it's very interesting, the type of approach of the company. And yes, so I decided to work with them, and I'm really happy about it right now.
Do you see differences between, obviously you've got experience internationally in Caribbean, Italy, and I know you obviously come to the UK as well. Is there differences across the markets internationally, do you think, or?
Depending by the country where you are, there are a lot of differences in the market. Let's say that is a growing market, and right now we are trying to create the culture around the product, the quality in UK, but it has a lot of opportunities, I believe.
Yeah.
It's a really growing market, yeah.
Definitely, definitely. What sets Icesteam aside from other manufacturers in the sector, and which countries do you supply to?
And we supply our product all over the world. So basically in all five continents through distributors. I believe we are different because we are really chef oriented, and we take a lot of care of the quality of what we are selling and producing.
Okay.
Yeah, the technology is really important, of course. Our machines are really reliable, are durable, and we put a lot of focus on what we need to change and improve, asking to our ambassador and consultant and chefs.
Okay. And I guess as well, kind of your experience and your colleagues' experience actually working in the sector means you can really help your customers.
Yeah, it's changing the perspective. It's not just talking about sales, but it's talking about solving problems in the kitchen, how we can help to solve problems.
Yeah. So, you know, Italy, it's the home of gelato, if you like. Can you explain to myself, the listeners, what's the key difference between what we might know as ice cream and then what Italian gelato? What's the misconceptions as well?
Yes, it's a really frequent question. It's a popular question. A lot of people asking what is the difference about gelato and ice cream. Basically, the main difference is the content of fat and content of sugar. Mm-hmm. So we don't need so much fats or sugar, because the gelato is produced fresh every day, and we don't need to store it for a long time. So basically, continuously producing fresh gelato every day, fresh product every day, we can keep the texture more softer and creamy, and the experience is different.
Okay. And is that the kind of big difference between, say, ice cream and gelato, that key
yes.
element? Right, okay.
Sugar, fats, and calories.
Right, okay. Calories, big part. So
yeah, it's an important matter right now.
It is. In your professional opinion, is there any specific element that's really key to the success of making really good ice cream or gelato in the manufacturing?
To me, it's always about the quality and the ingredient, respecting all the procedure to prepare something in the right way, and creating a great experience for the customer. It's all about the experience.
Of course.
And you can create a great experience putting together all these little details.
Yeah.
Ingredients, quality, focus on what you're doing. Also creativity, of course. Why not?
Of course. I mean, I asked question to David on the first part of this this podcast. Is there a particular ice cream flavor that is your kind of favorite go-to?
Oh, my all-time favorite is Bacio. Because Bacio basically is a popular chocolate drop, really popular in Italy, and is made with hazelnut and chocolate, and it has roasted hazelnut inside. Mm-hmm. So I had the idea to open my first shop because back in 1997, I had the idea to participate in an international competition. So I end up in fourth place. So that gives me the push to start my first shop, to open my first shop.
Right, okay.
That was everything was because of Bacio. So I started my career in the happiness industry. Let's call it like this.
Do you still make ice cream at home yourself or?
Sometimes I do. I try to not so often because, you know, I love gelato. So I love to eat gelato and it's really indulging. Sure. And I try not to overproduce at home.
No, of course. I mean, do you see, sort of on that same sort of theme, sort of vegan non-dairy ice creams, are they growing in the market or are they, you know, yeah, what's your view on those?
You know, it's for me, it's always been part of my production, my flavors, having like several vegan flavor because all the fruit I always produce was vegan without knowing the word vegan. It was just without any dairy, just my style of producing product was like that.
Okay.
And so I always had, when we start talking about vegan ingredients, I say, okay, I got it. I already
You're already doing it.
So, yeah. Okay, so not because I'm modern, but because it was just the original style to produce sorbet. Still creamy, still a nice texture, but without any dairy. I don't like the dairy in fruit because it's covering the real flavor of fruits. And I like to work with seasonal fresh fruits. So that's the reason why I'm not using dairy base. But of course, it's important to have gelato suitable for everybody and, you know, enlarging the audience of customers. So if somebody eat only plant-based product, you got some option for them too.
Definitely. I remember going to an Italian gelato manufacturer and tasting a pistachio ice cream that was dairy-free and then one that was dairy. And honestly, I couldn't actually tell the difference.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can feel the flavor of chocolate, for example, when it's dairy-free more than when it's milk-based.
So what's next for Ice Team 1927 for 2025 and beyond?
Okay, so we got some really interesting news. I don't want to spoil anything because in some days we're going to have the next show, CGEP. But we're going to have really exciting news around some small industrial machines to help ice cream makers, gelato makers to extend the range of product we can offer for B2B business, other type of business, and also the introduction of AI in gelato production, which is going to be, to me, a really interesting news.
Okay.
So basically, we're going to be ready to help gelato makers to create the perfect texture with every flavor, just introducing this new system with our machines.
Wow. How's that going to work with AI? Can you give us any more on that, or is it still quite confidential at this stage?
It's kind of, you know, I don't want to spoil too much, but let's say that our new machines, they're going to learn from the gelato makers and the recipes that the gelato makers is using to adapt for every single flavor in order to create the perfect texture. This is going to be a really interesting news.
All right, perfect. Thank you. Well, Stefano, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you. Thank you for that insight into Ice Team. Is this the first podcast you've done?
Yeah, that's the first one for me. Yes.
Fantastic. Okay. And hopefully for you in the UK, you pop and say hello and look forward to meeting you. For our listeners, if you want to find out more information, Ice Team's website is iceteam1927.it. And there you can find all the range of the product and also find out information on the contacts. Now we're going to go on to this final part of the show. David's going to rejoin us. We're going to be discussing the UK market and also the up and coming ice cream exhibition. Okay, so now we're rejoined by David, and we're going to be talking about the ice cream market in the UK, and we'll also be talking about the trade show that's coming up in Birmingham. So, David, welcome back.
Hi.
How big is the ice cream market in the UK, would you say?
We are being told that the Alliance is about 1.4 billion, is the latest figure I had on that.
Right. Okay, so quite large, really. Is it has scope to grow a bit more? Or I mean, how does that compare to, say, France or Italy? Are we comparatively small? Or
spending per capita on ice cream is compared to other countries is quite an interesting one. It depends how you define ice cream, you know, and your sort of premium and all that kind of stuff. And consumption is fairly high in the UK. I think the highest is in Scandinavia, I believe.
Seriously?
It doesn't always go, doesn't always go with the cold weather.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hence the reason that the Americans made up, Häagen-Dazs is just a made up name to sound Scandinavian.
Right. Because the market's quite positive there, yeah.
Because everybody's like, well, that's quite exotic.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Rather than, you think, why didn't they just use an Italian name? But in America, they think, oh no, that's it. But yes, so ice cream eating, yeah, it's all year round. Premium ice cream's very much growing in UK still. There was a, obviously it's all a bit cyclical. There's a lot of trends and fads going on. Maybe not so much fads, but there's the kind of healthier eating ones, protein and all that. There's a lot of innovation going on. There's maybe should be more innovation going on in ice cream, I think, at the moment. The supermarket things tend to be dominated by the big companies, but there's now a trend for supermarkets listening to their customers, and people in the local areas want their own particular ice cream. You know, they want
something more regional, artisan.
When I first got into ice cream, you know, I was always taught we make the best ice cream in the world. And then by my dad, right? And then everybody I met, they all said the same. I said, well, we can't all make the best ice cream in the world. So there is, in Britain, there's a tradition of people going to the seaside or whatever, very much in Scotland as well, Wales, Ireland, you know, their favourite ice cream place, which made and I know there's a bit of kind of rose-tinted spectacles going on looking at the past, but you were at the seaside, you were nice, it was a lovely ice cream, it would be freshly made, you can't beat a freshly made ice cream, and it all fits in with that. So, supermarkets and things, people still have that, they go to look, and then of course there's a whole stack of people have come onto the market since, and gelaterias and in the Italian style, and the supermarkets are picking up on that, and they're doing a lot more kind of regional stuff as well. Yeah.
So do you think that's kind of how the trend is moving, is more to this kind of regional artisan produce?
Well, I'd say there's an element of that, and the market is still heavily dominated by your likes of Häagen-Dazs, Ben & Jerry's.
Yeah, the big boys. Recently I just saw my little boy bought them. Ben & Jerry's bought out these like cookie chip things, cookie dough things. I mean, it just tastes like a cookie. Uh-huh. It doesn't really taste anything like ice cream, but they're popular with the kids, aren't they? Probably full of sugar.
It's all that, yeah. You need to offer an alternative to that. It's also the way these American ones are priced, it's like high low, so they're really unbelievably expensive. Or then suddenly it's half the price, and that's when they do the majority of their sales. So we try not to be like that. It is expensive to make. The most expensive way to make ice cream is using fresh milk and double cream. Now, a lot of people think that all ice cream has got fresh milk and double cream in it. Believe me, all ice cream available doesn't out there.
Right, okay.
You know, so I think it's important to get over to people, you know, the quality ingredients when they're buying.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's some very big brands out there that it's not even dairy ice cream.
Right. I mean, is there anything sort of surprising as you've got in, you know, you've worked in the sector a long time with your father and grandfather business before. Is there anything kind of like surprising about the ice cream sector that people might not know, or any, you know, insight that's a trade secret that you could tell maybe, or yeah?
Well, I think everybody follows social these days. There's an eye on that. I was a judge recently at an ice cream competition, and it was a UK, it was a heat for the Gelato Festival. Now, I got to be a judge because I'd actually won this in 2017 in London when I managed to beat Gordon Ramsay's patisserie chef, which was...
That's a statement.
I should probably just have retired. But,
Oh, said Gordon, on top of it.
I know, but it was just like quite simple. And it was at the Spitalfield Market. Anyway, they had this was the Shears version of it, and I was a judge. And a lot of the flavours were like kind of social media influenced. And the things like, and I'm just back from the, we were predicting the show that I've just been in Italy is really usually a precursor to what's going to be big around the world, because that's like the leading, it's like the car shows, that's where they launch everything. Yep. And the predicted massive for this year is, and it's already, and you'll get all the, my, I can hear my daughter so saying, oh, Dad, you're so in the past already.
Oh, seriously.
Dubai chocolate and things
like
that.
Yeah. Oh, that is, on. Do you know what? I was in Dubai for Gulf Food in October, whenever it was, and I picked up that Dubai chocolate, you know, the one with the pistachio through it, but not even knowing what it was. Yeah. It was 11 quid or whatever. I bought it home and I was like, oh my word, that is something special.
So I must have tried 12 different types of Dubai chocolate at that exhibition in Italy, and that's obviously what people are pushing on this. But that all goes on the back of... Now, if you'd asked me like 3-4 years ago, you ask any Italian what their favourite ice cream is, right, and they will say, do you know what they'll say? They'll say hazelnut, right, nocciola, right, but then they'll go on and on about it must be 100%. Piedmont hazelnuts, and everybody knows everything about the product, and they're so proud of their food. And the other one is pistachio. Italians always love a pistachio. Now, we used to make, when I was a kid and started selling ice cream in my dad's shop, my dad was making pistachio in the 70s. Right, absolutely nobody knew what it was.
And the Scots, like, what is this bloody green thing?
They used to call it pistachio nut, and I said, what's the point of calling it that? It's just so that people know it's a nut. Pistachio, and I think the way we make it is better now. Pistachio is actually probably my favourite flavour, I would say. I've changed my mind, I'm allowed to do that. It's my new, and the Italians love a pistachio. So there's pistachio with this, pistachio with that, you get all sorts of different elements of it. That's still massive. Obviously, there's pistachio and Dubai chocolate, so those things combine. That's got that phyllo stuff in it as well. Yeah. That's just somebody taking those kind of separate. I think there's a move towards kind of oriental, sort of Pan-Asian type tastes definitely going on in the market. Yep. If you want one from the, I think things like baklava might be quite that kind of thing. Yeah. Like even in these, and sometimes these things cross over into the mainstream. The next one, pistachio, is definitely coming mainstream. But the thing about pistachio is it's the most expensive ice cream to make that you can do, because pistachio paste is so expensive. Yeah. So it's a tricky one. And some of the premium pistachio ice creams I've got, it's not 100%. So I would recommend anybody buying a pistachio ice cream, check the label and make sure it's 100%.
Yeah, or it's not...
Or almonds,
man made, I guess. Can you get like a fake pistachio?
Well, I think you.
Synthetic.
I think you. If you see some, somebody did tell me they were thinking of developing a, no names mentioned here, but it was a no nut pistachio. And I said, how's that going to work? Yeah. You know, because their factory had a no nuts policy. Quite a few factories have that. And of course, they. But with ice cream, that doesn't really work. But to me, that would be. That would be right. You could get an artificial flavour, but it wouldn't. It would be horrible.
Yeah. That would be against all the rules of ice cream making, I'd hope. So, what advice could you give to sort of any small artisan producers that are maybe quite small scale and they're looking to scale up now? What advice would you give to them?
I would say, if you've not joined the Ice Cream Alliance, it's not just a social group for the over 60s.
Okay.
Although, to be honest, I am in that sector now myself. It is very much aimed at knowledge sharing. If you could, you go to their exhibition in Birmingham this year, which is full of different exhibitors, and you can do it all. You can see what's going on. You can meet with like-minded people through join the Alliance, which is not expensive for an association, and they get as much knowledge as you can from other people. Don't just rely on social media, YouTube, to learn how to do everything, because it's interaction with other people that makes the big thing.
Yes, yeah. So just talking about the show, yeah, what does that look like in Birmingham? What how many visitors are you expecting, or what can people expect to see there?
Show's coming up next week, actually.
Yeah, it's the 4th and 5th, isn't it?
When we're recording this. And it's the biggest ice cream alliance show everywhere. We have different... What you will see is that will blow you away if you've not seen it before is a proper... All the suppliers have showing off their flavours of ice cream. Proper ice cream displays made by high-end Italian chefs that will just blow you away.
Okay.
If you've not seen it before, I mean, I'm used to seeing stuff like that, but the attention to detail and the it's just, you know, like mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And then, but as well as all that, you'll get to try all the different ice creams, and you'll be, there's loads of equipment manufacturers, the Ice Cream Alliance will be there. I might even be there trying to sign you up to the Ice Cream Alliance. And they have there's the UK National Ice Cream Competition going on at the same time as well.
Okay, so lots to see. This podcast will be out just before the show, so it's coming out just before the show. So
right. Well, there'll be all sorts of... It's very easy to get to the NEC. Traditionally, in the last few years, we've had it in Harrogate. I went to my first Ice Cream Alliance exhibition in 1977 with my dad.
Right, okay.
And it wasn't quite the same, but it was the same concept. It was supply. And but it's very much more now from a business point of view. And it's not... So we have a whole section directed at mobilers and all their particular wants and needs. But the same mobilers are... It's a... Ice cream vans are very much in demand in all sorts of things, like weddings and things. So that is quite a strong sector.
Yeah.
And then we have our manufacturers, small manufacturer sector, medium manufacturers sector, and then the supplier groups. But basically, it's a bit of everything related to the trade that you would want, that who could supply you. It's a no-brainer. I mean, I've just been at the equivalent in Italy, which is, you know, must be 20 times bigger, you know, so, and you cannot do that in 4 days, but you can do it in a day. You can do the whole exhibition, meet loads of people. They've got the highest amount of pre-registered visitors ever, I think about 4,000, but basically it's not a huge exhibition, but it's specialist and dedicated. So I think if you're in ice cream, you can't afford not to be there. And all the people will be there, the bosses of the companies, your sales reps, people to advise. They'll be showing off all their new flavours. You'll be able to go and see those chefs making all this. Some great seminars we've got coming up with. Also, we've got Alex Polizzi.
Oh, wow.
Off the telly.
Okay, oh, great. So it sounds like a great lineup. That's the 4th and 5th of February at the Birmingham NEC, so next week.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, well worth a visit. Are you there both days? Are you?
I'm there because I'm, for my sins, I'm the treasurer. I'm there all the time.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. No problem. Well, David, thank you for your insight into your business, the Ice Cream Alliance, also talking about the up and coming show at the NEC. I mean, another question is this, just one final question. We're going to get any free ice cream if we come to the NEC? Hopefully, probably.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm fairly certain there'll be a few free samples there.
Great. Okay. Well, that concludes the episode of Kitchen Curiosity. I'd like to say thank you to David and also to Ice Cream Alliance for sponsoring. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast, David.
Yeah, great fun. Thanks. Lovely talking to you.
Great. Well, thank you again for your time, and I look forward to meeting in the future. Thank you.
All the best. Cheers.
Now, that concludes this episode of Kitchen Curiosity. I'd like to say a big thank you to my guests. It's been an incredibly interesting story, listening about the world of ice cream and also at the Ice Cream and Artisan show. It definitely sounds like an interesting show next week and well worth visiting. I look forward to seeing you all there. In the next episode, I'm heading over to Venice and visiting a leading factory in the Allegri portfolio. It's a busy one because shortly after, I'm heading over to NAF FM in Atlanta and more to follow this season. Thank you for our listeners tuning in. Already we've had some incredible suggestions and comments emailed through, and it's steadily shaping up to be a fantastic season. Please ensure to keep sending your questions through and comments, any topics you'd like me to cover or any questions you want me to ask, please let me know on radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.
Kitchen Curiosity is written and hosted by Radford Chancellor and is edited and produced by Tom Anderson. Kitchen Curiosity is exclusively sponsored by Ali Group and is a Sound Rebel production.